from learning English by playing video games to building a company with 50 or so employees. That's the story we're talking about today. We're talking with Alex Zub. My name is Jonathan Cottrell. You're listening to Developer Tea. My goal on this show is to provide you with the information, the insights, the conversations, the coaching, all of these things in an audio format for you to become a better developer, to become the great developer that I know that you want to be. I've said it on a few episodes. We're going to keep on saying it. I know that you want to be a great developer. Otherwise, you wouldn't be listening to this show. In today's episode, you're going to hear from a great developer. Alex has created a company that started with basically just him learning how to code. Alex's company, by the way, is called Handsome. You can check them out at handsome.is. Handsome.is. Thank you again to Alex. I'm going to get out of the way so we can get straight into this interview. Once again, this interview was done in person at Squares, so you're going to hear some background noise, but you can certainly hear some of the great insights that Alex has to offer. Let's jump into this interview with Alex Zub. I'm here at Squares with Alex Zub,
Hey.
who is the founder, are you the sole founder of Handsome?
No.
Okay. So Alex is one of the founders of Handsome, an agency based here in Texas, correct?
Yeah, in Texas, in Austin, Texas.
In Austin, Texas. And so we met the first night of the conference and we had some really good conversation. And as you can probably tell just from the slight accent, Alex is not originally from Austin, Texas. Can you kind of give a general idea or maybe just a full story, background story?
Yeah, it's a long story.
Yeah.
I'm born and raised in Russia.
Uh-huh.
So I've lived 23 years of my life in a city called Omsk,
mm-hmm.
which is about the size of Austin, Texas, which is about 1 million people. So that's where I kind of started to pursue my dreams and started to work as a, there isn't many opportunities out there, for a software engineer to grow.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the opportunities are, outsourcing, shops.
Yeah.
So it's pretty much companies, it's agencies, that build products for very often US based companies.
Sure.
I decided to take the route of being a freelancer and I've started to work. I've started to find some of the clients,
mm-hmm.
Mostly again, US based. That's the largest market. And that's what most of, developers do,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. in a city like Omsk. There are bigger markets. There's Moscow and St. Petersburg.
Mm-hmm.
They're way bigger markets and there's a lot of, product work. There's a lot more, companies that actually build their own products.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily, the case. It's not often the opportunity that you have in smaller cities.
Okay. Yeah.
I've started to work as a freelancer. I've started to build web products for the clients that I found. It started very simple.
Mm-hmm.
It was very simple, front-end development, just HTML, CSS pages, then kind of evolved into more full-stack work where I would, create the front-end, put it into WordPress. And the more I've gone into this, the mm-hmm. more I have been dedicated myself to not just building the product, but making sure it is what the client needs.
Sure.
And very often they will tell me, here's the design, I need a website.
Mm-hmm.
But they will not necessarily tell you from their perspective what they want to be able to accomplish with the website. And
sure.
very often they would not give any requirements, for example, for CMS, for WordPress.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's where I kind of started to connect technology and business.
Sure.
Talking to clients and actually figuring out what it is they want. What kind of experience they want from their side.
Yeah. Yeah.
which is a lot of what I do now too. Like as we've grown as a company, we have you know, bigger, more impactful clients, mm-hmm. but they all need they all have their own requirements, even if they're not, you know, telling that, if they're not very apparent.
Yeah.
They will still you know, want something from the perspective of you know, their staff who are going to be using the website, the, you know, their admins.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. In addition to the consumer side of things, which is you know, something you know, every, just like on this conference, like everybody is talking about making sure the product is built for the user, for the consumer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of something a lot of people forget is the actual, you know, the, does it make sense for the client? Are they going to be able to use it in a very productive way?
Yeah.
Is it going to solve the their problems? Yeah. So that's kind of something where I try to steer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And one of the clients I started to work with, I worked with him for a long while. He wasn't necessarily, you know, the direct client for me. Mm-hmm. He wore many hats.
Yeah, sure.
You know, he was selling the services. He was finding clients. He was finding, you know, clients who needed to build a product for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Very often against websites. He was the project manager. And he has, you know, technical background that allowed him to, you know, think, you know, and connect this business and technology part together.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, you know, on the technology side, making things happen.
Sure. Yeah.
So, and this person is John Roycher, who is the CEO of Handsum.
Very
CEO
nice.
CEO of the
yeah.
company. He's the co-founder, just like me,
mm-hmm.
Along with the two other very design-focused co-founders we have.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's I've worked with him for a long while. Yeah, he's been, you know, he's been very successful at bringing the business. And with one of the, you know, big large clients, we decided to make it official and start. You know, start a business, make, you know,
put a sign up.
It's getting, you know, we realize it's getting serious and we need to take it serious and, you know, grow,
sure.
Become, you know, more mature.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how Handsum started.
Yeah.
And it was 5.5 years ago now.
Uh-huh.
So it's been a long while.
And just so for people to get an idea of the scale of Handsum, how many people currently work at Handsum?
So we have about 50 people total at Handsum, and the kind of the size fluctuates depending on the clients we work with and the products we work with.
Yeah.
So we're trying to have, you know, very strong core of the company, but also be resourceful to be able to bring in people for, you know, specific clients. So
yeah,
that's about the size.
So it can fluctuate 55, 45,
yeah.
You know, depending on the...
Yeah, that's where we are trying... to be, you know, sustainable.
Yeah.
It's very easy to, you know, hire 10, 15 people
yeah.
and then all of a sudden you don't have work for them.
Yeah.
It's the market. The market is, you know, the market fluctuates itself. Like,
yeah.
It's very, a lot of that is seasonal. Like you, mm-hmm. the projects you'll get at the end of the year might be different from the project at the beginning of the year, just because, you know,
yeah.
those large clients, they plan their budget for the year.
Sure.
And by the end of the year, they might already have exhausted their budget.
Yeah.
Or they, you know, or maybe they have a large sum of money that they can actually, you know, spend. Then they plan for the next year, and that's where we need to, that's where we try to, you know, make sure they know about our services and, yeah, that's where we are trying to be on the radar of
yeah.
all of those companies because the we are providing the strategic services where we want to partner with our clients for, you know, 1 year, 2 years,
yeah.
provide the, you know, design and technology services.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really important point. A lot of people who are working in the industry, we, especially for freelancers, to understand... a lot of times our goal is to win a single single contract, right? When really the best type of relationships are those that last a little bit longer, right? It's whether it's a year, 2 years, or 5 years. I mean, these are the kinds of relationships that are going to end up being, you're going to be able to do more interesting work, which is a very important part of it. But perhaps the most important part for a business is it's much easier to maintain a relationship than it is to create an entirely new one.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Typically, especially for things that are as intentional or as in depth as something like a brand, branding website or something.
The more you work with a partner like that, the more value you can create for them. Just because you learn more about them, you can their business.
Yeah.
You have a lot more information to be able to provide way more value.
Yep.
Versus, having a short 2 months engagement where you just, build something for them and then, then you don't even know what's going on. Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of the time, the client is going to be more involved, and bought in to your, not just to your process, but to a successful collaboration, right? We've worked with a lot of clients on both sides of that fence at Whiteboard, and people who want a longer term relationship, people who want to iterate on a product, they're usually more willing to share in ideas.
Oh yeah.
And typically the project based stuff, where it's one project and done, 90% of what we talk about is budget, right? And budget is certainly an important factor, right? Like it's money is an important factor, but when budget is the only thing you're talking about, a lot of times you end up not being able to talk about potentially more important things in the long run for that project. So certainly the kinds of relationships that you want to go after is those 1, 2 year, 3 year and beyond, indefinite relationships. So I want to ask, kind of rewind a little bit and ask you, at the very beginning of your interest in doing, web development and learning HTML and CSS, and what was the kind of the switch, the moment that the switch flipped for you where you decided, I do want to do this. This seems like it's something I could do, indefinitely. I want to actually work in this space.
Yeah. So it's been, I think it starts from middle school, high school, which is where I just had a very old and slow computer. Yeah. I had a computer, so I'm kind of lucky.
Yeah. Head above the
my parents bought a computer to our family, and we didn't really have a need for that. Like, we didn't have a need to have a computer at home, but they bought it in 1996.
Oh, wow.
Which is, it was very unusual.
Yeah.
Like, in my school, for a long while, I was the only person with a computer.
Wow, yeah.
But because, somehow naturally, I was getting along with it.
Yeah,
and
I
was just sitting and trying to do stuff. And,
yeah.
There wasn't even a graphical interface. You know, there wasn't Windows. We only had, for the first couple of years, we only had DOS.
Yep.
So we had the command line. We had the file manager commander. Mm-hmm. There was, Tetris, the game. My parents figured out that I'm going to be, technically inclined in that sense when I would launch a game like Doom 1, I would launch it and there would be no sound. So I would close the game and go and set up, set up that.
The sound.
EXE, And then I would try to, choose all the options to see, try it out until the sound starts to work. So kind of
trying
things out, trying to make it work. Even when I had no idea what I was doing.
Sure.
And it was also all in English.
Uh-huh.
I obviously at that, age, I had not known any English at all.
Right.
So it was all almost like I was almost blind and trying things out.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of cases things worked out, and a lot of cases they did not. But that was something that they was, I've been a kid with a computer, and we've been sharing the computer with my brother, and he's also a software developer now. So oh, wow. Kind of, one of the things that great. Kind of make it happen is we had a computer.
Just but access,
it wasn't
right?
As, yeah. You know, it wasn't as easy as now you get an iPad and you can install a game and it can, you know, play that game all the time. It yeah. was, you know...
It's like a puzzle.
The end of yeah. yeah, it was a puzzle.
Yeah,
that's a
yeah.
good word. It was a puzzle, and it to launch a game, you had to do a whole bunch of stuff that makes you think, you know, outside the box.
Right. Yeah.
So yeah. now thinking about that, I think that that kind of made the major impact in.
So you went from a middle schooler who got a computer that yeah. that you wanted to run Doom. Or
yeah,
whatever.
And I wasn't even in the middle school. I think I was in elementary school.
Okay.
Then.
Yeah.
yeah. Then I was asking my father to bring some books from the library at his job because uh-huh. we didn't really have any, you know, books about programming. So I was asking yep. him to bring some, you know, books just to try something out. And I had no idea what I'm doing. Like I was taking the examples from the book uh-huh. and I would type them in, including the comments.
Yeah.
Because I had no like
you didn't know what they were saying.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And I had no idea that comments, you know, do not actually make any difference.
Matter, yeah.
But it was just fun trying it out and then, you know, changing numbers and yep. see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I would build those, you know, little applications on, you know, BASIC, mm-hmm. not even Visual Basic, so BASIC in a text file that would run the command line.
Yeah.
So that was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. And then as we got, you know, middle school and high school, we actually had the kind of a computer science uh-huh. classes,
yep.
which
mm-hmm.
were very simple, mm-hmm. you know, nearly no programming involved other mm-hmm. than, you know, a couple of times a year you would be asked to make something Visual Basic.
Sure.
Something
yeah.
very simple.
Yeah.
You know, take a sum of, you know, two numbers and, you know, output the result.
The result, yeah.
But I've always been accomplishing the job within, you know, first 2 minutes mm-hmm. of the class,
right.
and I would just do
because
stuff.
You were used to working with computers and
yeah.
other people weren't.
Yeah, yeah. And most yeah. of the people, yeah, would only use computer when they were in the class.
In the class, yeah.
yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's been interesting.
We'll get right back to the interview with Alex in just a second, but first I want to talk about today's sponsor, Dolby. You know, we all expect our theater audio to sound great. And this is a space where we're very interested in surround sound. But what a lot of us may not recognize is that people actually demand high quality sound from all of their devices in all scenarios. And this is exactly what Dolby is providing to developers today. It's not just for your theater anymore, and it's not just for movies and music anymore either. If you're developing an iOS app that has any kind of audio assets at all, your users can benefit from Dolby's codecs. Now, what exactly is this that Dolby is offering? Well, basically, it's going to make your audio more clear. It's going to make it easier for your users to understand the dialogue. And you can have multi-channel audio. And you would think that this is, once again, only in a theater environment. But the Apple iPhone 7 supports multi-channel audio. This is something that you may not even recognize when you're going through the process of building your app, but certainly your users will. You likely don't even need new audio assets. Most likely, all you need to do is use Dolby's already existing tools. Of course, you can use things like Adobe Audition, but you can also use a free encoding tool online. Go check it out, spec.fm/DolbyiOS. spec.fm/DolbyiOS. Thank you again to Dolby for sponsoring today's episode of Developer Tea. Well, let me ask you this question, because I get this question quite a lot, and I can't really speak, you know, authoritatively on it, because English is my native language. How important was it to you along the way? Because it sounds like you started learning before you knew English and you're typing in comments. And, you know, that's some of the first exposure potentially that you had to English, the
yeah.
written language. And particularly in Russia, the character alphabet is different, correct? So you have a kind of a different introduction to
yeah.
the English
yeah.
language than the average person. How when did that happen and how important was it?
Yeah, it's actually interesting. I have, well, we had the you know, we had English language classes in school, and it started from, you know, second grade.
Yeah.
And to go all the way to, you know, end of high school. So we would have 10 years of English.
Okay. Yeah.
But it wasn't very effective just because it was so disconnected from, you know, practical usage.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, during those 10 years, you would not speak to a single person whose native language was English. So you would, you know, the students would lose the knowledge, you know, during the summer. They would have to try to, you know, recall everything again and learn everything again. So that wasn't very effective.
Right.
What was effective to me is, well, again, computers and programming languages. But even more than that, it was the online games.
Uh-huh. Wow. Interesting.
So, you know, end of high, well, end of middle school, you know, beginning of high school, I've been playing online games a lot.
Yeah.
Really
a
lot.
Sure.
And most of the games, you would not get them in Russian. Like, they would not be translated at that point. Now it's everything gets translated just because the market is so big.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Back then, it wasn't very, you know,
it wasn't big enough to justify.
Yeah. So a lot of games would not have translation.
Yeah.
So you would have to deal with English. And it's the best kind of education, is not where somebody tries to make you remember words or, you know, remember some rules. It's when you actually, you know, see them in front of you. And then in order to play that game, you need to figure out
what it means.
What it means. Yeah. What it says. And I was playing the, you know, Worms, Worms Armageddon, like 2D. So that was a fun game by itself, just to play, you know, even single mode game. But I was trying to play online, and I was always fascinated to learn other people's culture.
Slang,
again,
thinking
about it now, I realize that, and it's probably resulted in the fact that I love traveling so much now.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But I liked to speak to people who are not like me. And you
that's
know,
a good
they,
quality
they
to
speak,
have. Yeah, you speak, learn a lot that way.
They speak the other language. Mm-hmm. They speak differently.
Yeah.
So in Worms, you don't actually speak, you don't use voice, but there's little chat window that you could open up and you could type something in.
Sure, yeah.
So, yeah, and that's where I got a lot of, you know, English slang, because everybody would use it, like all this online game slang.
Right.
But also, that's something that helped me solidify my English language knowledge, and actually not a, you know, textbook English, but the actual English that people do use.
Right.
Even if it was not 100%, you know, correct English.
Yeah.
It was still something, you know, people use.
Sure.
And I've played it for a long time. I've played it like for a couple of years.
Sure.
Then I switched to World of Warcraft, which is another, you know, very popular game.
Sure.
And again, most of the, you know, most of the people of my age at that point, they played, you know, they had the local Russian servers, and they play with people, you know, with all, you know,
Russian speaking.
Yeah. So it wasn't, to me, again, for some reason, I tried to get on American servers.
Yeah.
And, you know, speak, again, there's no voice speaking. You would type and, you know, kind of talk to people in text. But again, that's something where I got so much English language knowledge so that in high school, English classes has, you know, stopped being a problem to me.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
I've struggled with it before, but at that point, it became so easy for me.
That's so interesting.
So it's kind of like, online games, you would think about online games as a waste of time.
But not in this case.
To me, to me, it actually helped a lot. And
Potentially instrumental in helping your career, like, advance, right? Like, you were able to become conversational English.
Yeah.
We're going to talk more with Alex in the next episode of Developer Tea. If you don't want to miss out on that, go and subscribe in whatever podcasting app you use. There's some great apps out there. And pretty much all of them have the subscribe feature. So make sure you subscribe if you don't want to miss out on the second part of my interview with Alex. And it is one of my favorite interviews. I highly recommend that you do listen in. Thank you again for listening to today's episode of Developer Tea, and thank you to today's sponsor, Dolby. If you're an iOS developer and you are not paying attention to the quality of your audio, I can guarantee you your users are. Go and check out what Dolby has to offer to help you create better quality audio experiences for your users. spec.fm/Dolby iOS. spec.fm/Dolby iOS. Thank you again for listening to today's episode of Developer Tea, and until next time, enjoy your tea.